One of the most disheartening situations in the United States educational system is the gap in standardized test scores between African American, Hispanic, Native American, and low-income students and their white, Asian, and economically advantaged peers. Again, in the United States educational system, there is a gap in standardized test scores between African American, Hispanic, Native American, and low-income students, and their white, Asian, and economically advantaged peers. This gap is called the achievement gap, but actually there are many gaps, and the gaps exist not only in terms of standardized test scores, but also in areas such as advanced placement course participation, high school graduation rates, and college entrance and graduation rates. In a speech given by Margaret Spellings, Department of Education Secretary for the United States, on March 20, 2006, she said the following. As you know, every year about 1 million students drop out of high school. Nearly 5 out of 10 African American and Hispanic ninth graders do not graduate from high school on time. The graduation rate for large cities such as New York is only 58%. Furthermore, by the year 2019, when this year's fourth graders turn 24, whites will be 2 times as likely as blacks and 3 times as likely as Hispanics to have a college degree. Again, by the year 2019, whites will be 2 times as likely as blacks and 3 times as likely as Hispanics to have a college degree. In schools across the nation, white and Asian students outperform their black and Hispanic peers in every subject. Today, the phrase closing the achievement gaps has become popular, and a growing body of literature is examining the causes, conditions, and explanations for the achievement gap. Even better, attention is focusing on the strategies that can reduce the achievement gaps by looking at schools and districts that are effectively narrowing these gaps. To be blunt, as a nation, we cannot afford to produce yet another generation of students of color or low income who are ill-prepared for full citizenship. Students of every race, ethnicity, language, and income need the skills and tools to compute, critique, and create at high levels. Again, students of every race, ethnicity, and language, and income need the skills and tools to compute, critique, and create at high levels. As a country, as a school system, we must agree to identify and employ initiatives that hold the greatest promise for all students, including the students of color, poor students, rural and urban students, and second language learners, to their highest possible levels of achievement. Anything else does not satisfy the goals of the common good. We have to at one time be interested in what is in the best interest of these students, at the same time as we are interested in what is in the best interest of the country, the common good. Now, in order to really do this, we have to acknowledge a couple of different things. First, we have to acknowledge that students are different. There are differences between students that have always existed and arguably are desirable. In any classroom, we can find students who are performing at all different levels. Johnny may be outstanding in language arts, but not strong in mathematics. Ashley can be absolutely wonderful in science, but weak in the arts. We celebrate these attributes. We like these unique talents of every child. But when we can predict performance differences based on race and income, or characteristics that are not related to the children's natural skills and abilities, we face intolerable achievement gaps. The moment that we say somebody cannot perform because they are a certain color, they are a certain economic level, they come from a certain ethnicity or background or religious beliefs, that they have a role because of gender or color or age, then we are facing achievement gaps that indeed are intolerable. We find these intolerable gaps when we look at test scores such as the Scholastic Aptitude Test or the SATs, the American College Test, the ACTs, because these continually demonstrate gaps in performance between students race based on or grouped by race and income. Again, standardized test scores that are studied and demonstrate gaps in performance between students based by race or income. These are called the achievement gaps, and these have to be closed if we are to be a successful society. Secondly, we have to acknowledge the fact that indeed children develop in many different contexts. The classroom is only one of these contexts. Children are influenced by in-school and out-of-school factors, factors that vary across place, time, and cultural identity. With that in mind, we have to take a serious look at the factors that affect children in school. Parents, administrators, teachers, school systems, curriculum. Whether we are in curriculums that are lockstep curriculums or whether we are in curriculums where students have the ability to proceed at their own pace. We have to determine, based on research, policy and practices that are going to be able to assist us in closing the gaps. Closing the gaps really comes down to one thing: hard work. Within this concept of hard work, the first item we need are great and dedicated teachers. Not just good, but great. Great and dedicated teachers. That's the first step. Second, a thoughtful approach to testing. Diane Ravitch refers to standardized testing with a great deal of pessimism. However, a thoughtful approach to testing, where testing is a part of and not the only determining factor in whether a child is promoted or passed on to the next grade, a thoughtful approach to testing makes sense. Students should not be taught by method of drill and kill just to pass a test. However, test-taking skills are a necessary component of a thoughtful approach to testing. Thirdly, an integrated curriculum. We have to discuss not just saying English language arts, which includes reading, writing, spelling, listening, communicating. It has to include an integrated curriculum where the maths and the sciences and the social sciences and the arts and the languages and the physical education needs of the students are all integrated together into an integrated curriculum. Fourthly, we have to have lots of art, lots of music, and lots of physical education. Students learn best when they are active. The younger the child, the more active they need to be. And just because we think that a child is older as they approach middle school or junior high school, the reality is that lots of art, lots of music, and lots of physical education are more necessary as a child progresses. And there may be some gender differences at work here as well that will also need to be studied in order to close the achievement gap between the male and the female. Fifth, a willingness to bend and occasionally break the rules. In a system like New York City, bending the rules is sometimes okay. Breaking the rules, well, I guess you had better be good at what you are doing and you better have the support of the people above you and below you. You better have the support of the parents, the teachers, and maybe even the students, as well as the local instructional superintendent and the regional superintendent, if you are going to occasionally bend or break the rules. And finally, this goes back to the first doctrine that we need hard work. There has to be a complete refusal to let any child fail to learn. The reality is that not everyone's going to learn at the same pace. Not everyone is going to learn in the same way. Not every child is going to be successful in the traditional setup that we may have in a classroom. However, we have to have in our own minds a complete refusal to let any child fail to learn. The old adage of every child can learn has been challenged in recent times, especially in the urban settings, by children that will not learn, that refuse to learn. Well, as teachers, we cannot allow that child to refuse to learn. We have to encourage them. We have to demand that they learn in our classrooms.